My name's Roger, and I'm an alcoholic. Hell yeah. I got it bad. It's all over me, man. Only through the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, a guy like me could get sober. Ain't no other way. But I'm excited about being here, man. I've been eating like a hog. Woo! I have, man. My wife's going to beat the shit out of me. Good thing I wear buffet britches. You know, I got them britches that give. Oh, man. Never been to Roanoke till this come up. And I'm glad that y'all asked me to come. Tennessee, if it wasn't for Tennessee, I wouldn't be going a lot of places. He's asked me to come around a couple of these old places. Man, I like it. Guys, the rough guys come to these things, and they start to soften up. You ever notice? Come in here like they're going to whoop everybody. And before they leave, they love you. I love you, man. I love it. Heck yeah. Oh, man. But I know why I'm here. I was asked to come here to share my experience, strength, and hope, and nothing else. What the hell am I going to share? Physics? I am not scarred by education. I know a lot about fire extinguishers. I sit out in the hall a lot and read them old fire extinguishers. And I ain't never went to a gym on a steady pace, you know. I'd go by it, look at it. You can tell by looking at me, I ain't worked out very much. My wife calls me chunky. I went to a women's prison, and I told them, I said, hey, man, I know there's a lot of women here tonight, but ain't nobody getting funky with chunky. Somewhere in the big book it says, we believe that God's will for the alcoholic is to be happy, joyous, and free. Anybody read that? I want to make sure I'm preaching to the choir, you know. And if you ever look the word happy up, I looked it up in Webster's. It says, to be happy, you must be content with what you have. I'm content. I ain't got everything. I ain't got all the material thing, but I'm happy. I got a wife that's got all her teeth. It's not a joke. I'm not lying. And I'm from Kentucky. So I'm happy, man. Look at her, y'all. And joy. You hear AA people talk about joy around here. You know what that joy is? To see others get this program. And we've all seen this. A guy walks in, his hair's all messed up, he's new. A month later, he's combing his hair. He's got his shirt tucked in. Shut up. And his sponsor's walking behind everybody. Said, what happened to Glenn? And the sponsor goes, I'm working with him. That's joy, baby. That's joy right there. Just like my sponsor did when I got sober, and just like your sponsor. He got joy from helping you. And to be free is to be free of self. That's the toughest one. Try to get out of yourself for 5 minutes. It's hard. It is hard, man. Just imagine if you got out of yourself for a half hour. That's better than going to Hawaii. I'm telling you, man, if you could just get out of yourself. And that's what I want to do tonight, is get out of the way
and let the good things come out. Everybody's heard all that old crazy stuff, and I will tell it. Well, that's where I come from. But if I could just get out of myself, that's what I hope you walk away with tonight. Get out of you so you can help others like they helped me. I'll never forget this old guy wanted to help me. And I didn't want his help because he was clean. And I was all dirty. I had to cut my underwear off with a pocket knife. Them old pancakes pile up in them underwear. And I thought, man, I asked that old man, why would you want to help me? He said, because I used to be like you are, and somebody helped me. I think it's why we're all here tonight. Because we used to be like they are, and somebody helped us. I come from a poor family and didn't even know it. We're so poor, man. I grew up in a little old town called Elkton, Kentucky, back in the woods. My dad was a great big man. I love to talk about my daddy. My daddy was a man. Y'all have seen him. Great big old stocky man, big old shoulders, big head, had hands. I swear to God, you shake my dad's hands, you get a splinter. He had them old rough, y'all seen him, hey, man, hey. And man, I love my daddy. Love my daddy. I want to be just like him. And when I was little, Tennessee looked like a tree. Great big old thing, you know. And the little town we lived in, but when it got dark, everything was closed. There was a courthouse in the middle. When you go through our town, we had the courthouse was in the middle, and you went around it. And it was round, but they call it the square. We ain't right. And man, was nothing going on. And my daddy loved. There was no funeral home out on the other side of town that had those painted glass windows. Had carpet. First time I ever seen carpet was at the funeral home. And man, life was so good. Don't feel sorry for me, cause man, I thought we were rolling. My dad was a sharecropper. He worked the farm for rich people. And they let us stay on their farm. Shut up. That old house that they let us stay in, we only had one piece of furniture. It was an old couch. And my dad worked that farm, man, it looked good. And whatever they grew that year, we ate. Like they had green beans that year, we had green beans all the year. If they had corn that year, we had corn all year. They had taters, we ate taters all year. And if they had hay, we didn't eat that hay. It was too hard to swallow. I like saying that. Something you just like to say, you know. But my dad was so tickled about taking me and my brother to the funeral home with him. And my mother, who's a big woman, would say, don't you take them boys out here dirty. Clean them up. And he'd walk over to the dishwater and take an old dish rag out and squeeze it and rub our heads and rub our face. He'd go, they're clean. And I believed him. I thought, man... And we'd go out and get that old pickup truck that had cattle racks on it and had everything in the back of it. I always had a chain, jumper cables, chicken wire. And if anybody broke down, they'd love to see my dad come along. Oh, they'd flag him down. Oh, they called him Butterball. called my dad Butterball because he's a tall man, big wide shoulders, and my mother'd get him shirts that had all the X's. And he'd start to button them. He only had one defect. He'd get about halfway down, he couldn't button his shirt no more because he had a big belly. Y'all have bellies here? He had a big belly. I loved it when I started hearing everybody read stuff. I thought, shoot, I'm at home now. In Florida, they don't talk this way. They always tell, I'm from up north, we know. I'm not prejudiced. But I'm getting damn close. And man, my dad would try to button that shirt and he couldn't button it, and everywhere he went you could see his belly button. And he always had his finger in it. Everywhere, I swear to God, it was like a glove. He'd have his finger and people walk by and say, Butterball, how you doing? He'd take that hand out and say, I'm doing good. And they'd shake his hand, all us kids would go, oh. I love my daddy, boy. And he'd take us to that old funeral home where everybody'd go, and he'd go there. He didn't care who was laid out. He'd pull in that old driveway. And my dad is a disciplinarian. When I first got teeth, I got spitted. I go, he was a disciplinarian. They go, whoa. And he'd pull in that old gravel parking lot, and he'd park that truck. And right when he turned it off, I reached for them vice grips, opened that door. And I was getting ready to get out, and my dad said, hey. And we knew whatever he said, he was only going to say it once. He looked at me and my brother, and he said, do not eat nothing. All right, Daddy. And he went on inside that old country funeral home, and we went to every car and started stealing valve caps off valve stills. I don't own anything with air. Nothing. I mean, we got bicycles, but we ride on the rims in the country. And we're still in valve caps. I ain't right. And we go inside, and all these country funeral homes have kitchens. And on the counter would be pork and beans, green beans, white beans. Oh, shit, I love it. White beans, navy beans. Everybody brought beans. I think that's the most horriblest thing you can bring to a funeral home. The family sitting by the casket. And all of them sitting there going. And their loved ones laying in that box. If I die tonight, don't bring beans. Bring cookies or something. God almighty. Them beans we ate tonight, y'all see. You'll understand it later. And we saw that counter. And being poor, we never got cookies or anything. And we spotted these cookies. They're made by Piggly Wiggly. They're called 66. That was their brand name. And they had cream in the middle, some sandwich cookies. Oh, man, soon me and my brother seen them. We forgot what my dad said. We bush hogged them. Started eating them cookies. I mean it, man. We had cookie dust in the corners of our mouth, all over our bibs. And then walked out in the parlor where my dad is. He's up there by a casket by somebody he don't even know. And people are coming by viewing the casket. He's standing up there with his finger in his belly button. And he's thanking them for coming. Thank y'all for coming.
And he seen me and my brother walk in. He didn't holler at us. He waited till we got right up on him, and he started beating the hell out of us. Right in front of that casket, and you could hear everybody in the funeral home go, "Look at those heathens." And a man walked up in a nice suit with chalky white hair and had cards sticking out of his coat pocket, shiny cards. He said, "Are you Butterball?" And my dad said, "I am." Now, but when my dad talked to you, you'd think he's going to punch you. But he wasn't. He was a good guy. But he had that look. You know how people got that look? "Hey, how you doing?" He had that look, man. That guy said, "Well, I've been looking for you. I want you to come to work for us in Louisville, Kentucky." Did y'all hear what I said? I didn't say Louisville or Louisville. It's pronounced Louisville. Louisville. That's right. Don't ever go. Y'all know where Louisville is. That's where they had the Derby today. Don't ever go there and stop somebody on the street and go, "Hey, is this Louisville?" Because he'll say, "No, it isn't. It's around in the alley." That's awful, ain't it? But he asked my dad to come to Louisville. He promised my dad that he would pay him cash money. My dad has never received cash money for work. It was always exchanged for food. And people would give us government cheese. You ever ate government cheese? I love government cheese. I dare say somebody say something bad about government cheese. I got my knife on me. I love government cheese, Tennessee. I do, man. And I guarantee you're not going to use that little cheese cutter on that government cheese. That little wire goes across. Oh, it'll bust. You better get a butcher knife out and saw that deal. And then don't put it in the microwave because it'll blow up. I don't know what's in that government cheese, but I guarantee if anybody in this, all of us in this room ate government cheese tonight, you can shut that toilet down. Ain't nobody going. You know, ain't nobody, won't be no bowel movements tonight. It would lock you up, man. And it was good. I swear, man. Daddy would get them big crackers. Remember big crackers? Remember when all four of them were stuck together? Who's breaking them down? Putting them in that sleeve. That's kind of stuff I think about. You know what I mean? I love when somebody says, "What are you thinking about?" I said, "I'm thinking about what would chairs look like if our legs bent the other way." And man, my dad would fix us cheese and crackers, and I loved it. And that man talked my dad into moving to Louisville. And he left that funeral home like a teenager. He ran out to the truck. "Come on, boys, we got to go tell your mama." And we jumped in the truck. Man, he was flying. He was doing almost 40. I'm telling you, back where I come, I don't know by speed. Nobody's in a hurry. "You going home?" "Yeah." And he got pulled up in front of that old house. I mean, he skidded in the dust and everything, jumped out of the truck and ran in the house and grabbed my mother like this, and she's a big woman, picked her up and kissed her right in the mouth. And her feet never left the ground. And then put her back down. I love my mama, you know, that's my mama. I ain't right. And I got three large sisters. I guarantee you, if they was here tonight, Tennessee, you'd have to get some fans blow in here because they'll suck up all the air. Big girls.
And man, we're going to move to Louisville. My dad's all excited. Mama's putting all our underwears and socks in them piggly wiggly bags. Daddy backs the truck up against that old porch. And my sisters cannot get up in the truck. He starts loading them like cattle. Getting up under them and lifting them up. They get on, he put the couch in the back of that truck, tied the back legs with grass string. Tied the front legs with grass string so it wouldn't move when you took off or put on the brakes. Them three girls took the whole couch. There was nowhere left for me and my brother except on the arms. And he got on one arm and I got on the other. And here we go to Louisville. 65 wasn't even thought of. I mean, there's no expressways. You had to go Dixie Highway. Y'all know what Dixie Highway is? You catch every light there. We got on Dixie Highway and started rolling good, man. Had a good pace going. All them underwears and socks are flying out the back of that truck. We look like the Beverly Hillbillies. And my brother is turning purple. He's sitting on that arm, and he's shaking his legs like this. I said, Ralph, what's wrong? He said, man, I got to pee. I said, tell Daddy. He went, hell no. He's scared to death of Daddy, and there's always an idiot in the family. So I knock on the window. In Florida, they don't get that. I knew y'all would. My dad turned around real hard. He went, what? I said, we got to pee. He didn't look for a rest area. He didn't look for a black top or asphalt driveway or nothing. Pulled right off in the weeds. And my mother, I'm going somewhere, y'all. I'm going to make a point here. My mother takes them three girls and they go up in the woods. My daddy made me and my brothers go to the back tailgate and stand on that tailgate and pee off the back of that truck while cars went by. And I believe that's what made me drink. Hell yeah. Oh, y'all have heard it. You know, yeah. Some of you said it, you know. New people come up with anything. But y'all know, and I know, alcoholic's going to drink. I mean, if he's got a booger, I'm drunk. That's it. Hell with this. I'm drinking. I'm sorry for saying booger. I don't like to cuss. That's for the purists, you know. And man, I remember getting in Louisville. If you go to Louisville, there's the Ohio River that divides it from Indiana. And he went as far as he could and come to a stop sign. And if we would have took a right, I would have been brought up in the predominant east end of Louisville. But he took a left. Went in one of the roughest damn neighborhoods I've ever seen in my life. On every corner is a Catholic church. If there's any Catholics in here, I feel sorry for you. And I really like the way y'all do your church. They don't even read the Bible. They read the program. I love it, man. They wouldn't let me in. I got a resentment. But it was great, man. Good old Alden, everybody's fighting. You could go by anybody's house and they're throwing stuff and hollering at each other. I thought, man, this is going to be the place. And he looked, and they all had shotgun houses. Y'all know what shotgun houses are? Straight through. And there's only a front room, a bedroom, and a kitchen. Nothing else. And man, he's my dad. Rowdy, my dad is so sharp. He's riding down the road through each street, and he come up on a house. It had a white cardboard sign like it was stapled onto it. And it had the number 4 and the word rent. Nothing else. He stopped the truck, got out of the truck, went over and pulled that cardboard off of it and started studying it. And a man walked out from next door, said, "Hey, buddy, you want to rent that house?" My dad said, "I do." Now, back then, you didn't have to give them a rest record, a financial statement. Back then, man, they'd pull the key out of his pocket. He'd hand that key to my dad. He'd say, "Have my money in 30 days. My dad took that key. He said, "I'll have your money." He backed that old truck up against that old, wasn't a porch, it was just steps, and pushed that couch off in the front room. And he told us to all sit on that couch and look through the window because he's going to Booty Probus's used furniture. We think that it's a new furniture store. That on 15th and Market, it was just old used furniture. I'm thinking he's going to get some, brand new stuff. He come back with a truckload of junk. Junk. Backed that truck up, man. Pushed off 5 rollaway beds. Y'all know what rollaway beds are? How in the heck does anybody have sex on them? I swear to God, if the fan's on, they squeak. I don't know how mom and daddy did anything. But he'd push in beds in the bedroom, unhook them, and he's setting up house. Then he went back out in the truck and brought a kitchen table with chrome around the edges and rolled it through the house like a wheel. He rolled it in the kitchen, set it up, went back out and got some chairs, brought in 3 chairs that matched. It wasn't the same level, but they brought in one back and had the heart shape. Brought one and had them big long back to it, and then brought in another one, didn't even have a back. Man, he's setting up house. And then he went out and brought in a big floor model TV, set it in the front room, went back out and got another TV and put it on top of that TV. Shut up. I mean, we are rolling, man. And he went to work for that trucking outfit and come home Monday night with a pocket full of money. And he was carrying 2 sacks of A&P groceries. Y'all remember A&P? And he come in the house and we followed him through the house like hungry wolves. He gets back in the kitchen, pulled out a stalk of bologna and laid it on the table. Pulled out a jar of mustard, put it on the table and took that top off. Then he brought out them crackers, opened them crackers up and laid it on it like he's doing a science experiment. Then he took out his pocket knife, opened it up and licked both sides and then dried it off. And then he started to cut the bologna, and me and my brother looking up at him, he'd say, "How thick y'all want it? Do you want it this thick or this thick?" And he cut that bologna real thick, put it on that cracker, took the same knife, wallered it through the mustard, and made a happy face on that cracker. Shut up. I took a cracker, put it on top of that mustard, grabbed it, took a bite of it, and that mustard shot to them hoes. Yeah. Turned it sideways, licked that mustard off, went in the front room and started watching them 2 TVs. Y'all know what I heard? A bunch of y'all had 2 TVs. You know what I'm talking about. One of them had the picture, and the other one had the sound. Yeah, that's high fidelity.
Man, we were so poor, didn't even know it, Randy. Didn't even know we were poor. Thought we was rolling. And me and my brother started going to school, and everybody at school was skinny. I don't like skinny people. Thank God for the steps, I've gotten a lot better. I could tolerate them. Yeah. Back then, I couldn't even tolerate them. Everybody had grease in their hair. You see them dudes look like the Fonz. Got greased, man. I ain't got no hair. My dad took us to the barber college. You ever been to barber college? At the barber college, they only cut hair on poor people. 50 cents a haircut. And there's always some hateful man running the place. And soon my dad walked in, that old hateful man go, how many? My dad said, I got two. That man looked down at me and my brother, he go, sit down. And we'd sit down. And when I sit down in the chair, I start going, hey, I just want a little. And he pulled what hair I had, pulled it straight back, took them clippers, and started taking my, cutting my hair. He only had one cut, and it was called off. When he got done with us, we looked like two little pit bulls. You know what kids look like after you shave their hair? They look mean. Oh, it was terrible growing up, man. And we started going to school. He bought us polished cotton pants and polished cotton shirts, and we looked like two little heavy maintenance men. We'd walk down the hall of the school, and them greasers were all huddled up, and they're combing their hair. We come walking through there, and one guy goes, hey, we got a light out. And my brother went over and punched him right in the face. I mean, hit him hard, but knocked snot out of his nose. Hit him hard. And I'm going somewhere. There's a reason why I'm telling you this. Because every time I've done the inventory, y'all know what that is? All right. Because Dr. Shuckworth told Bill Wilson, we go back through our lives. Nothing counts but honesty and thoroughness. You read that? What about back rows? Hi. Make sure I'm at the right place. The very next day, at the very same school, walking down the same hall in front of them greasers. These greasers ain't saying a word today. And I'm walking behind my brother. He's got a couple steps ahead of me. We get by the greasers, ain't nobody saying a word. And I have a personality change right then. Because when I went in front of them, I was going like this. I've had a personality change. You'll read that later. I did. I always go back to this, always. Even if I did, if I went back and done inventories today, I'd always come up with this and that tailgate, because it really disturbed me. It changed me, and man, I need to have a change of heart and a psych. The big book says we must have a psychic change. There's little hope of your recovery. If you're still coming here with that same old BS that you started out with in front of that liquor store and you're going to bring it here, it ain't going to work. That's what my sponsor told me. I come in here, I was going to whoop everybody. I'm going to clean the whole front row out. And he said, Rod, if you touch one of them boys, we're going to have you arrested. I shut up. I just got out of penitentiary. If you've never been to penitentiary, everybody been to penitentiary, I guess. I'm assuming, you know, we've all been to penitentiary. If you haven't, I'd go tonight. I'm telling you, man, I had an eye-opening experience.
Because I just run them old streets and drank, man. I didn't know any better. Come from the country and somebody offered me a drink. Well, yeah, I took it. And I'll never forget in school this little short guy named Charlie. Charlie's so heavy, he ain't even got a neck. You've seen him. He's so heavy, his neck's gone. He'd say, Raj, you drank? I said, hell yeah, I drank. I know why I said it today. I didn't know then. Just out of nowhere, yeah, I drank. I drank all the time, Charlie. I didn't know anything about selfishness and self-centered. Our book says that's our problem. That's the root to our trouble. You know what the root is? Anybody get disturbed about the word root? The root. That's not the leaf. That's not a little twig. It's a damn root. Yeah. They helped me with it. I said, where's the root? Look in the mirror. Dang. Couldn't you got a little easier? My God. And man, I just run and gun like everybody else. Met Charlie down at the football game. He had a bottle. It was Orange Rock vodka, and he had the neck of it twisted in that bag. He took it out of that bag, and it said Orange Rock vodka. Everybody in this room drank Orange Rock vodka. One of you had. Tennessee? There you go. Thank you. God dang. Thought I was an alien there for a minute. And man, he took an old tin top off that Orange Rock vodka. He leaned back and set that bottle on his bottle lip right there and take a big pull and pull it out real quick. And he starts slapping himself in the face. He said, come on, Raj, hit me in the face like they do in them movies. I looked at him real serious. I said, hand me that bottle. I grabbed the bottle from Charlie. And every time I put alcohol in me, the same thing happens. Every time you put alcohol in me and my jaws stick out. I'd hand the bottle back to Charlie, he'd grab it. He'd lean back, take another big pull off of it. And this time he pulled it out and he was bobbing and weaving. Come on, Raj, hit me like I do in the movie. And I'm trying to grab that bottle from him. I get the bottle from him, I lean back, I take a big pull, and this time my hands start tightening. And all I can think about is his jaw. Charlie grabbed the bottle from me, he leans back again. I'm standing over here going, I wish you would. Charlie pulled the bottle out. He goes, hey, Rod. I went, bam. Hit him right in the face. And he sat down on the curb and started crying. Started calling me all them Roanoke names. And that's the first time I ever got a buzz. Remember Buzz? Hell yeah, you do. That's why you're here. You remember that buzz, man. I remember that buzz. I mean, my ears got real hot, and my neck got real red, and I got real sexy. Oh, act like y'all have it. I know you have around here. If you think I'm lying, go buy a beer joint or a nightclub tonight. You'll always see a guy or girl hanging on the car. And I started chasing that buzz. Because I liked the way it made me feel. Because we'd lean over on the fence at the football game and girls would walk behind us. Charlie said this didn't happen. I know it happened. I heard it. Girls would walk behind us and say stuff like, I want you. Kiss me tonight. By God, I heard it. He said I didn't, but I heard it. You know y'all have heard it. And man, I just could not stop. I started chasing that buzz, chasing it. Run after it, man. I'll do anything. Let's drink. Hell yeah. Dang. And man, I do stupid stuff. Stupid stuff. You ever been peeing on the side of the beer joint? And a car come behind you. I don't know who it is. The guy goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" I go, "Nothing." It's the police. And I'd go to jail. Just dumb stuff, man. And I'd go in front of this judge. This judge would say, "Well, don't do it again." I said, "I won't." And then I'd do it again. I'd get locked up. Man, I got locked up one night. I got in this guy's car, and I took the handles off the radio. And I was going to unloosen the radio. And I fell asleep. And next thing I knew, a cop was knocking on the door and said, "Get out of the car." And the people that owned it was going, "Who is he? What's he doing?" And they arrested me. And I went back in front of that judge. And I went back in front of the judge. If you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. And I kept on doing it. And the judge said, "If you come before me again, I will help you." That's what he said. He said it so in, I wanted to go get locked up. The way he said, "I will help you." And I said, "Well, judge, you better take a picture of me because I ain't coming back." Not a week. I'm back in front of him. He said, "Roger, it's your lucky day." I thought, "All right." He said, "I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you 5 years in the penitentiary." "Your Honor, you got the right guy." He said, "I got the right guy." And he did. He had the right person. I got sent to penitentiary. If you ever been on the... in jail and on the prison walk. Y'all have the prison walk here at your jail. Everybody's going to penitentiary. And went down to penitentiary. And it was the best thing that ever happened. This is coming from a convicted felon. I'm a convicted felon. And this is the best thing, Tennessee, that's ever happened to me, is get sent down there in that penitentiary. And he put me in a cell with a young black kid. Young black kid from Eastern Kentucky. I'm from Western Kentucky. He's black. I'm white. Something ain't gonna work. And I'm standing in front of his cell, and you gotta wait for him to come unhook you. They unchain you, take all the chains off your ankles and everything, the one around your waist. And the cell opens, and he gets on his knees. And he holds up his hand. He goes, "Hey, Raj, God loves you." I went, "Wrong cell." And it was the perfect cell. God works in mysterious ways through idiots, fools, and drunks. I'm both of them. It's not my fault. And I walked in that cell, and every day, every morning and every evening, he would get on his knees and ask me to pray with him. You don't get on your knees in front of another man in penitentiary. It don't look right. But he would get on his knees and he'd say, "Roger, won't you pray with me?" And I'm ignorant. I don't know any better. His name is Hambone. That's what everybody called him. I thought if God sent me a messenger, send me a white one named Michael or Eric. Oh, hell no. It's got to be dramatic. I get Hambone.
Right on time, I'm telling you, man. Right on. God ain't never late. Never has he been late. Look back through your life. Man, you should have got run over at night. Or you should have got caught with that girl and got stabbed. It's always that. He was always there. I love people say, well, I don't believe in God. Woo. Okay, it's all right. It is. It's all right. Because it'll be the one of your understanding. And that's what I'm talking about. The God of my understanding was always there. And I go out on the highway. I'm a trash picker-upper. I'm damn good. I am, man. If I seen it, I'd pick that trash up every day, man. I took pride in it. I'd come back and tell Hambone I picked up 75 pieces. Tomorrow good 76. He'd look at me like, hey, he's crazier than hell. But every time I'd come back to that penitentiary, he'd be there on his knees. Right when I'd walk in, and he'd always put his hand up like this. He said, won't you pray with me? Do you know how it feels to have somebody who's determined to get you pray? And I'm such an idiot. And deep down inside, if you could pull my chest open, I'd scream out, I want to pray. I do. I really do, man. But selfishness, self-centered. There's that damn root again. The root to my troubles. And he did not stop for 8 months. 8 months, he'd asked me to pray with him. Every day, every night, he was determined. When he'd do the walk, you know how you do the walk at the penitentiary? He'd walk and smile. Everybody else is hateful. Hambo would walk around. He looked like Ray Charles. I got a woman. Way across. He did, man, and I wanted what he had. But you don't tell people in penitentiary that. Don't go to a penitentiary and say, hey, I want what you have. Because you might get it. Yeah. We don't hold hands in penitentiary either. Hey, we're going to pray. No, we're not. And, man, every day I'd go pick that trash up, and I've been down there for about 8 months, and God's dealing with me. You know if God's dealing with you. Don't nobody have to come up and tell you. You know what you're going through. And, man, I'm going through it. I'm telling you, he's dealing with me. And I'm picking trash up that day, man. I picked this one card up. It's one of them church tracts. Y'all know what church tracts are? You know them little cards you open up, and there's a subliminal message in it? Did I say it right? Yeah. And there's a picture of a cross. And the cross had these two sideboards on it, and these guys, these stick men are running across that cross. And they get to the middle of the cross would light up. And I get it. I got it that day. Remember how people say, when'd you get it? I got it that day. I've been living in the dark. Selfish, self-centered people live in the dark. And it's happening to me. And I'm tired of it. I'm sick of me. How long can you wait around that cesspool of you? Oh, how wonderful. I'll leave him alone. He's all about him. Ugh. How long can you wait in that? And AA knows that. That's why people don't come up and jump all over you and beg, please do an inventory. Because we know if you stay here long enough, it'll happen. We know that. And that's how they treated me. They left me alone. I mean, they would mention what the steps did to them. They would mention, they would tell me their experience, strength, and hope. They didn't give a dime about mine.
Nobody ever asked me, Rod, share your experience, strength, and hope with us. Never. Because they knew I was crazier than hell. I'm selfish, self-centered. What am I going to talk about? Me? Oh, boy. And I got it, man. I get it. I've been living in the dark. I'm telling you, man, I wanted to cry. All them wasted years. And I got on the bus and we're going back to the penitentiary. All I can think about is that little black kid, Hambone. I dare you. I'm talking to myself. Nobody, I ain't talking about, I'm talking to myself. I'm going, I wish you, I hope he asked me to pray. I'll pray with him. That's how I'm talking on that bus, talking to myself. We get back to the penitentiary and you get off there and we get in front of the cell. Did they open the cell? They unchain you. This went on every time, every day. Same old stuff. This time when I walked in there, he'd put his hand up like it's like he always did. And I pushed it away. And I said, I'll pray with you. Now I'm talking to him like I want to punch him. I ain't got the joy yet. And I knelt down beside him and he went off. You hear me? He went off. I'm telling you, he didn't have a hair on his head. If he'd had hair, he would have stuck up. Because he started huffing and puffing and popping and he started saying stuff I'd never heard before. It sounded like the Declaration of Independence read backwards. He was happy, man. He was happy. And I got down on my knees right beside him and I thought, man, I'm going to ask God to help me. And right when I got ready to, here come the guards. Two white guards. I'm on my knees. I'm 39 years old. This Hambone is 23 or 22. And right when they got to our cell, I jumped up. I can't let them see me. And right when I jumped up, he got real loud, boldly. He'd say, Roger, God don't care who's watching. He said, Roger, God don't care who's listening. And I'm thinking, you want to bring it down? Use the inside voice. He wasn't paying no attention to me, man. He said, God is the perfect gentleman. He's ready when you're ready. And I heard it. I got down on my knees. I asked God to help me. I didn't ask God to get me out of penitentiary. I didn't ask God to give me a car or a job. I just asked him to help me. And I've had a psychic change right then. Read the big book. Unless you have a psychic change, there's little hope. That old BS you've been carrying around, it don't work here. I'm sorry, man. I was a gangster too. But my teeth fell out. Have you ever seen a gangster without teeth? That's what a guy told me. He said, Rod, you ain't no gangster. Gangsters got teeth. You ever lost a tooth? I lost 27 teeth. Fell out. If I don't say nothing tonight, remember this. Floss. I walked around that in that penitentiary. I can't hold my teeth. I mean, I can't hold my tongue back because I don't have no front teeth. And everybody, they get away from me. I'd say, hey, man, give me a hit off that cigarette. They would go, hell no. And I got out of penitentiary. And they sent me to a halfway house called the Talbot House. I went to the Talbot House, and I stayed for 2 years. You can only stay for 90 days. Some are sicker than others. And I'd go to meetings. I'd stand back there by the coffee, and chicks would walk by. I'd say, y'all want a cup of coffee? I'll get it for you.
And they'd giggle and laugh, and I'd go sit down by my sponsor. I'd say, hey, Charlie, if chicks think I'm funny, he'd say, Raj, if chicks think you're a lizard. I didn't know. You know how drunks are. We don't know it. We come to AA, by God, we look good. And that's what I thought, man. I thought I looked good. Hey, I met this girl because she said hi to me. Everybody in this room's done it. You know how MAA girls are. Hi, Roger. Oh, my God, she wants me. I went, oh, Charlie. I said, Charlie, she wants me. He goes, Rod, she don't want you. She's just being friendly. I said, no, she wants me, I can tell. Her face got red. Yeah. And I asked her out. She wouldn't go out with me, and it hurt my feelings so bad. I said, Charlie, will you take me through the steps, please? UAAs love this. Y'all love it when the guy says, will you take me through the steps? And y'all say, will you do anything to stay sober? Oh, hell yeah, I'll do anything. Come on over, Raj. I live in a halfway house. I thought he was going to come and get me. I had to walk 28 blocks, and I got to his house, knocked on the door. He didn't answer. He just went, come on in. And I walked in his house. He had the big book on a stand. You seen them old country people having Bibles on that wooden stand? He's got the big book in big print. Oh, shit. Oh, no. I come in. He said, Rod, you know why you're here? I said, yeah, I asked you to take me through the first three steps. He said, are you thirsty? I said, I'm thirstier than hell. I said, I'm so dry, Charlie. I need something to drink. He said, I'm going to go in the kitchen to make some Kool-Aid. You want some Kool-Aid? I said, look at me. Do I look like I want Kool-Aid? Hell yeah, I want Kool-Aid. I hate when you go to somebody's house, especially if you're big, go to somebody's house and they go, are you hungry?
Well, duh.
Hell yeah, I'm hungry. He said, well, start clapping. Huh? He said, start clapping. I'm going to go make Kool-Aid. You start clapping. I said, I ain't clapping. He said, well, leave. I just walked 28 blocks. Shit. I started getting into it. Charlie come back in the room and had the Kool-Aid on the tray. He said, Rod, stop clapping. Grab your Kool-Aid. I grabbed my Kool-Aid. Whoo, took a big old pull off of it. Set it on that tray. I said, oh, man. Hey, Charlie, why'd you have me clapping? He said, because you're a thief. He said, if your hands are moving, you can't steal nothing. And y'all know, you're a thief, man. Come on. I knew what it was. It didn't make me mad. I got you. And was getting ready to get started, another guy knocked at the door, a guy named Mike. He said, open the door for Mike. Open the door for Mike. Mike come in. And Charlie said, Mike, what are you doing here? He said, I asked you to take me through the first three steps. Charlie said, are you thirsty? I'm thinking to myself, here we go. You know, like I'm a pro at it now. Mike said, I am, Charlie. He said, I'll go get you a glass of Kool-Aid. I'm looking at Charlie like, and? And Charlie kept walking. What the? Try to come back in the room, gave his Kool-Aid. I can't wait. I'm ratting him out. He said, what's wrong, Ron? I said, Mike didn't clap. And Charlie looked at him real serious. Mike ain't a thief. Oh, I'm good. Yeah. Old thiefless Mike. I felt good about it. And we started to go through the first three steps. He said, you've been powerless over your life. You've known it for years. But you never reached out to a power. Never did you reach out to a power to help you. Alcoholics are people who cannot solve their problems by themselves. And he said, you need to reach out to a power. And I had. I told him about my experience in penitentiary. He said, yeah, but you don't have a manager. I said, where are you finding them managers at? He said, you're looking at him. And he was right. Then we went to the second step, and he said, you've been crazy all your life. Now, we could take anything, but don't call me crazy. You can say anything you want to say about me. Don't talk about my thinking. You know how people say, you're crazy. Your mama. Don't talk about my thinking now. And my thinking was crazier than hell. And we got to the third step. The third step prayer. The one that really works. Finally, here's a prayer that works for me. And he set the big book up on the couch where me and Mike could see the prayer. Because we don't know it. And we all three read it. And something happened to me. I'm telling you. Something's happened to me. You know how I know? Let me tell you. Seriously. I used to look at somebody. I'd look at a guy back there. And then this side of my head would go, what a nice guy. And this side would say, go smack the shit out of him. That don't happen no more. It's at his house. I left it at his house. I know y'all all the rest of the weekend, y'all be going, don't look at me. But I don't. I know. You know how you know that you know that you know? I know, man. Something's happened to me. I have changed. I've had a psychic change and a change of heart. I'm not the same guy that came here. And I started, there was this little redheaded girl I told you about. It said hi to me. My sponsor sent me to the University of Louisville School of Dentistry. And I start to get my teeth back. Hi. And I did. I started getting my teeth back. And this girl's name is Beth. And now she's really perked up. Hi, Roger. I just snarl at her like a rattlesnake. And every meeting Beth went to, I'd get behind her and I'd say, Beth, when are we going out? And she's a redhead. She'd turn around real fast. She'd say, when pigs fly. I did this for 3 years. 3 years I chased her. Y'all call it stalking. I call it love. And every night I'd ask her to go out with me. She said, I'm not going out with you. 3 years later, guess what flew? The pig flew. She said, I'll go out with you. I'll meet you at Burger King. And she left the meeting. I thought, shit, I ain't got a car. I took off running. I ran to the Burger King. And went inside and got an ice cream cone, brought it back out to her, hand the ice cream to her. She grabbed it, and as she was getting ready to grab it, she kissed me right in the mouth. And didn't nothing move that I could control. Yeah.
And man, we started seeing each other. And everywhere we go, it had to be lighted real good before she'd go there. A lot of light. And man, I fell in love with her. And on Christmas Eve, 1996, I went to her apartment. She lived with this other girl, and I bought a ring from the store. Let that settle in, store. Not none of that jackleg stuff. Hey, Rod, I got 50 of them, you want? Had a receipt and everything. And I was proud of it, man. I got a ring. I got a receipt. Shut up. Got her ring size just right. And when I pulled up and went up to the apartment, she came to the door with a big box. She said, I got this for you. I cannot remember any girl buying me anything. And she bought me a pair of khaki britches. On the back of them, it says Dockers. Shut up. Never had that before, man, ever. And they fit it. They had the little buffet thing, you know, where it gave. And I said, Beth, sit down. And I got on my knees. She goes, what are you doing? I said, Beth. And I started crying, man. I just started bawling. And she started bawling. And then her roommate come in, she started bawling. She goes, what's wrong? She said, Roger asked me to marry him. And we got married, May the 30th, 1997. And everybody came to the meeting was from AA. Came to the wedding. Even my father-in-law, he's sober. And he's a federal judge. We had a lot to talk about. Yeah. And man, it was perfect. And my wife got pregnant on our honeymoon. I'm lying, man. Because we got married on May 30th, 1997. We had a little girl named Lily on December the 12th. It's 9 months. Don't add it up. And we had a little girl, man, and life is perfect. And then my wife got pregnant again and had another little girl. But she's pregnant with this little girl, and my sponsor, Charlie, got killed in a car wreck. And his sister-in-law called me. She said, Raj, are you sitting down? I said, yeah, why? She said, oh, man, something terrible's happened. I said, what are you talking about? She said, Charlie and Judy's been in a wreck. She said, Judy's in the hospital, but we lost Charlie. I said, you're crazier than hell, man. I've never been so honest with another man. Never felt love for another man. I'm telling you, man. And he's gone. Just like that. And man, I was coming apart. And everybody would say, get another sponsor. Before they even put him in the ground, get another sponsor. And I got another sponsor, and I judged him. You know how we are. Well, he ain't like Charlie. He's not Charlie. And we got through that. And my wife is trying to help a little girl who's pregnant. And the little girl's going to have a little boy. And she kept on taking cracks and marijuana pills. Wouldn't stay sober for nothing. Didn't know nothing about staying sober. So the little girl had that little boy. And at 10 weeks old, she brought him over to our house and asked, would we babysit? She said, Roger, will you watch my little boy? I went, hell yeah. Shit, I got nothing but girls here. Woo, I need help. And I don't like girls to team up on you. And they team up on you. You ever clean that sink out with one of them tools? I put that tool in and I'm pulling it out and
pulled a squirrel out of it. The hell is that? It was hair. I need a boy bad. And that little girl didn't come back for 4 months. And I fell in love with this little child. Love him, man. Because I'd lay bare-chested on the floor on my back, and he'd crawl up on top of me, and he'd rub my face. That's my boy, man. He loves me. I taught him how to say dad, dad. Didn't take much, you know. And then she came back. She said, I'm here to get Christian. And my wife, Beth, said, no, you ain't. I said, Beth, don't talk to her like that. It's her child. I've been brought up right. Charlie said, do everything right. God will acknowledge everything you do right. And I did the right thing. I took the child, gave it back to her. She left with the child. And every time I'd come home from work, a lot of people think I'm a doctor. I'm not. I'm a truck driver. Everybody in this room seen me, too. Go ahead, shake your heads. I ain't seen you. Look again. Y'all seen me. And she came and got the little boy, and for the next 3 days, every time I'd come into the TV room, all three of the girls would get up and walk out. And on the third day, she brought the child back. She said, Roger, will you watch him again? I went, hell yeah, give him here. She gave him to me. She left, and my sponsor said, wait 2 weeks, and then go file emergency adoption. I waited 3 weeks. I gave her a week. I went and filed emergency adoption. Every time you go to file emergency adoption, you had to pay $1,500. And you had to go to court 7 times. And each time you had to pay around $1,200 to $1,500. I don't make that much. But I was willing to give it up. And I went through all 7 of them. Got to the last one to... And this prosecuting attorney would come in the courtroom and she'd hug me. I'm a convicted felon. And she would hug me. She said, nobody goes through with it because it costs money. And you're going through it. You're getting that child today. And that last day in court, she come busting through the doors. Drunk as hell, hollering, calling us MFs, SOBs. And that judge said, today, Roger, that child leaves here with your last name. And that little boy is my child today. He's 11 years old. He looks just like me. Swear to God. He looks just like me. Swear, man. And I used to go pick him up at the car line there at the school, and I'd pull in the car line. Christian would run out to the car, and he'd jump in the car and go, hey, Dad, guess what? Today they brought the fire truck. I said, did you get on it? I climbed all over Daddy. I said, what was the most important part of your day? He said, being with you. You can have my drink. You can have all that crap. I'll take this life that y'all have taught me. And thank y'all for listening. Thank you.